Hello once again, and welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Patrick Donges. Tomorrow is the 4th of July, and along with fireworks and parades, a big part of this patriotic celebration is food. From grilled burgers and dogs to potato salad, today we welcome a guest who will surely have some ideas on how to make your 4th of July food tastier, spicier, and more interesting. Rockstar chef Rick Orlando is chef owner of New World Home Cooking Company in Saugerties, New York, and chef manager of New World Bistro Bar in Albany. Along with eating at his restaurants, you may have also seen him taste victory himself on Food Network's Chopped program, on his PBS program, Rick Orlando's TV Kitchen, or you may have read his book, We Want Clean Food, which was a companion to his PBS program. Chef Rick Orlando, welcome to Vox Pop.
How are you, Patrick?
I'm doing very well. Thanks for coming in today.
Nice day to be in the studio. It's nice and cool in here.
Exactly. Better than the humidity outside, I'm sure.
I'm Sicilian. I kind of like humidity. It's summertime.
You can give us a call today at 1-800-348-2551. Again, that's 1-800-348-2551. We also have a myriad of ways to get in touch with us online. You can post comments at the bottom of today's show page on the Vox Pop section of our website, wamc.org/voxpop. You can comment below today's Vox Pop wall post on our Facebook page, facebook.com/wamcradio. You can tweet your questions and comments at wamcvoxpop. And of course, you can email us. That's at voxpop@wamc.org. And I'll be checking those throughout the program here. Chef, what are your typical plans for the 4th? Are you cooking all day?
Well, you know, I'm working, actually. Yeah. I tend to work on the 4th of July. I like to try to give some of my chefs a little breathing time. It's a busy day, more in Saugerties than here because we have more of a tourist rush there. But my wife and I decided that we would give one of our managers and a couple of our cooks a day off and cover because our kids are all grown and doing other things. So right. We're hanging out, you know, so we, you know, and life is a cookout for us anyway, so we thought we'd go in and cook. So I'll be working in Saugerties tomorrow night.
That's very nice. We were chatting a little bit before the show about the cook-off versus barbecue debate.
Cookout versus barbecue. You know, I'm from Connecticut, kind of grew up in New York and Boston and upstate here. And we tend to use the word, we're having a barbecue.
Sure.
And I've got a lot of friends, especially through having the restaurant so long and so many students from the Culinary Institute of America that have worked for me that are from the Midwest, from the South. They say, what are you barbecuing? And I say, well, I'm going to grill some fish. They say, well, that's not a barbecue. Mm. That's a cookout. So you can choose your own syntax here. When you're cooking outside over fire, it's just a nice thing to do. Whether you're doing a 12-hour brisket barbecue or whether you're flipping some hot dogs on the grill and they're off in a minute and a half, you're still cooking over fire outside. It's deep down in your DNA. It's one of the primitive instincts we have is to take food and cook it over fire. That's kind of goes way back. So I think that's why we find comfort in it. And we gather around and it's a very primitive thing. It's kind of cool.
And food tastes so good when it's over that open flame.
If you do it right, you can really wreck it. I've had some pretty bad black chicken, but and not like the breed black chicken. But yeah, you have to really know how to use your heat sources, use your rubs, use your brining, use your marinade. And that's what we'll chat about today.
Excellent. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-TALK-1 is the number. We're talking with Chef Rick Orlando. And so I myself have been kind of tasked with making some potato salad for tomorrow. And the recipes that have been emailed back and forth, you got some mayonnaise, you got some sour cream, some mustard maybe. Anything I can do to make this dish a little bit more interesting?
Well, that's a kind of a neat question. You know, potato salad, coleslaw, green bean salad, all those little salads that you can buy. Not to discourage grocers from selling them, but boy, you ought to make those things yourself because they're fun to make and they become kind of an identity. And there's all kinds of ethnic influences on it, right? Like a German potato salad, it's going to be more with red potatoes and red onion and vinegar. Wow. And no mayonnaise and maybe a little bit of dill. And then you can go to France where the potato salad will be, again, with potatoes with more mustard than a little bit of mayonnaise and maybe doing soft leeks or scallions or green onions. I love potato salads. We have this Italian tomato potato salad that my wife's family makes where it's just with olive oil and a little bit of red wine vinegar, and you put in sliced cherry peppers and capers and salty stuff like that, which is really
great.
Good.
Yeah.
But a really cool thing to do if you're going to make potato salad is to grill your potatoes. And that gives them a great flavor. You just take a
So you want to cut them first?
Well, or... if you can get nice little potatoes, you know, okay. We're kind of early in the local produce season, so okay. There's not a lot of local potatoes, but there's some around, and there's even red radishes around. So picture this. Take a sheet of foil, and I don't like my food to touch the foil. So then I'll line that foil with a piece of wax paper or parchment paper so they're in it. And then I put the potatoes in there kind of single file so they're okay. Not on top of me. And I'll throw some herbs, some garlic cloves, maybe a sprig of rosemary or thyme, and I bundle it up. And put it on the grill and just let it cook for about 20 or 30 minutes, and they steam with the herbs, and those potatoes are so awesome. You don't have to do a lot to them. You make a little dressing, you toss them. Could be mayonnaise, mustard, maybe a little tarragon or dill. It could be, like I said, red wine vinegar, capers, even anchovies, and just toss them and then let them cool down, and you have a fabulous potato salad that you cooked outside.
That sounds very good. I'm going to try that
and
out.
And on that, you know, with the local farmers markets now, what you are seeing a lot of are little radishes now. And radishes whole, mixed in with potatoes whole, are delicious in potato salad because they kind of get a creamy, watery flavor, kind of a cross between a potato and a turnip when they're cooked. So you can try cooking some radishes in there, and that's really yummy.
We have a listener checked in on Facebook. Pamela asks, I could use some inspiration for an easy, inexpensive, no cooking needed appetizer to take to an outdoor party tomorrow. Any recommendations?
Well, there's a lot of things you can do, no cooking needed. You can make, are you talking about a nice little salad, maybe a fantastic cucumber salad? I love cucumber salad with a little bit of Greek yogurt and lemon juice and dill and some shaved onion. A potato salad's good. You can buy a couple of cans of black beans and rinse them well and add some cilantro and jalapeno and lime juice and garlic and red onion and make a great black bean salad. Those are all simple, quick, easy. You want to make sure there's enough acid so they're not too flabby tasting. One of the ideas of the cold salads with barbecue is to balance against the fattiness of meat, you know? So I like them nice and bright and tangy.
Okay.
Those are always good, you know?
All right. Salads is the name of the game, it seems like, for a no-cook
Yeah, salads are good. I mean, you can do little bruschettas. You can grill a little bit of bread and then make some toppings ranging from the obvious, like diced tomatoes. We did some, a big fundraiser at the Carrot Barn in Schoharie for salt for the recovery of that area. And we did a bruschetta bar. And we did everything from braised and chopped kale with garlic and olive oil. We roasted cauliflower and mashed it and spread it on bread. You know, so you can do a lot of neat things with toasts that are kind of fun. People love eating little schmears on bread. It's kind of a global yummy,
sure.
You know? Yeah.
All right. 1-800-348-2551 is the number here, talking with Chef Rick Orlando. Another thing we mentioned before the show, the a debate, I guess, the gas versus charcoal barbecue debate. What do you prefer?
Well, cooking over wood lends a lot of flavor and a lot of different complexities and aromas. It's a little messy and it's a little bit of work. I think it depends on where you live and how you dispose of it. At my house, I have both. I have a gas grill and I have a nice kettle grill outside. And when I'm home on a Sunday, we fire up the kettle grill. Mm-hmm. You know, I live in the Hudson Valley, and with all the storms we've had the last few years, I have lots of hickory and maple wood all over my property that
we
had cut up, right? But if you're going to use charcoal, I really urge you to spend the extra money and buy the natural lump charcoal, because that's actually wood that's been kiln dried, as opposed to briquettes, which are mystery black things that burn a long time and who knows what's in them, you know? Gas grills work. I mean, I use my gas grill when I'm doing something quick. I use it a lot of time for doing vegetables while I'm doing some slow meat on the charcoal grill. So, you know, you can use them both. I'm not a anti-gas person, but I think cooking over wood is really nice. My son built a fire pit, and occasionally we'll build a fire in the fire pit and put a whole leg of lamb on there and let it cook for 3 hours. But that's a complex situation compared to flipping a few burgers.
Sure.
You know, but cooking outside is still wonderful. But the gas grill thing, you know where charcoal briquettes came from, right? It's a good story. Kingsford.
Okay.
Was Henry Ford and I believe John King, which was his brother-in-law, when they were building the Woody, they had a lot of leftover scrap wood, and they actually kiln-dried it and bound it with other leftovers from making cars. Could have been rubber, could have been plastic. We don't really know. And began this charcoal company. So you don't really know what's in a briquette. And I know that, you know, first thing it says on the bag now in really big print, you know, another one of those big idiot messages.
Yeah.
Charcoal contains carbon monoxide. Do not use in the home.
Right.
So... you know, I feel a lot safer buying a nice bag of natural wood charcoal. It lights fast, it cooks hot. And it's beautiful.
And every once in a while, you see one of those really tragic stories where somebody decides to kind of light the hibachi in the kitchen
or heat the house with it. Yeah, it's not a good idea. Don't do that at home.
1-800-348-2551, 1-800-TALK-1. Let's go to a short break now, and we will get to your phone calls in a minute. You're listening to Vox Pop on WAMC.
Support for WAMT comes from Bethel Wood Center for the Arts, presenting Natalie Merchant in concert with the Hudson Valley Philharmonic, Randall Craig Fleischer conducting, Saturday, July 20th at 8 p.m., bethelwoodcenter.org. The Alternative Baker, Rosendale, artisan all-butter baked goods made from scratch, handcrafted lemon velvet cakes, and egg sandwiches daily, where taste is everything, lemoncakes.com. Bow Wow Bathhouse Resort and Daycare, South Deerfield, Massachusetts. For over 7 years, providing 10 hours of daily indoor-outdoor play, professional grooming and retail shop, thebowwowbathhouse.com. Capital Region Honda Dealers, with locations in New York, Vermont, and Massachusetts, offering new and pre-owned Hondas, capitalregionhondadealers.com. And the Lake George Association, working to protect Lake George since 1885, reminding boaters to keep boats clean, drained, and dry to help prevent the spread of invasive species, lakegeorge.org.
1-800-348-2551, 1-800-TALK-1. We are here on Vox Pop talking with Chef Rick Orlando of New World Home Cooking and New World Bistro Bar. And we are going to go to the phones now. We'll go to Paul in Altamont. Paul, welcome to Vox Pop.
Hey, thanks. It's great to be talking with you guys.
How you doing, Paul?
Hello, Rick. I have a question regarding controlling the heat with barbecuing chicken, and you happen to mention something just like that at the outset of the program. I do my very best to lower the heat as much as possible. We typically marinate the chicken in like an Italian dressing or maybe something Southwestern or even Asian and get it on the grill, and it always just flares up to death and ends up burning the outside before cooking through to tender and moist on the inside. Any suggestions with is it just my gas barbecue, and sometimes I do use a wood or charcoal barbecue as well. I use either or both, but typically in a hurry, the gas is quicker and faster, and so I'll go to that first.
Paul, I can help you here. I've grilled about 9 million chickens, and I got a couple of tips for you. Yep. First of all, it's always better on the bone, right? Chicken is always better on the bone. When the chicken is on the bone, there's natural juices, there's waters, it helps to steam it. One of the best ways to do chicken on the bone is just to split the chicken in half. The legs and thighs take longer than the breast because the legs and thighs have much more developed muscle. And if you're using a natural chicken or a cage-free chicken, which actually runs, the legs and thighs will take even longer. So break your chicken down into two breasts and two leg and thigh pieces because they're going to cook at different times, okay? Then you don't kill your breast while trying to cook your leg. And I know that happens a lot. You get that dry, white breast and bloody leg and thigh. The next tip I would give you is brining your chicken, not putting a vinaigrette on it at first because those have oil in them, and the oil is what causes a lot of flare-ups. And I'll go over a quick brine ratio. Write this down, 16 yep. to 1. 16 parts water to 1 part salt. So that's a gallon to a cup, okay? And you put a cup of salt in a gallon of water, and then you can add some sugar or some thyme or some allspice or cayenne or whatever you want. But that's your brine. Put the chicken in a bowl and cover it with that water and let it sit for about an hour. That way, when it cooks, it will steam from the inside. The word is osmosis. It is exchange fluids with the water. So the water is then in the chicken. And then what I like to do for the cooking method is if you have a grill that has – do you have 2 burners on your grill or just 1?
I do have 2.
Okay. So you set 1 on relatively high and 1 on very low, left or right or front and back, however it works for you. And I always cook the chicken bone side down, not skin side down. Cook it on the bone. The rib rack will go down. The back side of the leg and thigh will go down. And also it's good to take where the leg and thigh meet and just score it, like to take a knife and just cut into it a bit there where the joint is so that that blood will come out. And then you cook it on relatively high heat on the bone side for about 10 minutes until it starts to get a little charred. Turn it over, mark it on the skin side, and then move it to the slow side Then you can baste it and let it cook on the slow side. If your grill has a lid and you can close the lid, you can close it. And then it works almost like an oven at that point. You're getting the flavor of the grill, but it's going slowly and it's going to cook more slowly with the lid down. It creates a convection heat that comes down, goes, the heat from the barbecue will rise, hit the lid and come back down. So it's almost like grill roasting at that point. And it takes about 30 minutes for a leg and thigh and about 20 minutes for a breast to cook that way, if you do it that way. But the closing of the lid, creating that circulation. But the brining is really important because especially the breast meat. The breast meat will just dehydrate and dry right out.
And now that's a little bit more difficult to do with charcoal, correct? Getting those zones or?
Yeah. It depends on whether you have, like, I have a Weber, a round Weber. Mm-hmm. And once my fire gets started, I'll move the coals pretty much all to one half and a sphere and leave the other half with no coals.
Okay.
So the same thing. I can move it to the other side. Sometimes at that point, I'll throw some wood chips on the coal and put the lid on it and let it go pretty quickly. I mean, once you close that lid, don't go watch a football game, I mean, or a baseball game. You have to check it every few minutes, but you will be creating like a basting situation. And then you take your Asian marinade or your Italian dressing or your barbecue sauce, and you mop, you glaze, you lacquer, you paint periodically as it goes and cook it onto the outside. But a wet brine will help that a lot. Wet brine, bone side down, hot then slow.
I've taken some notes here, and that's awesome. I'm following along. I'm pretty darn sure here, and I think that's going to be great.
And that works for ribs as well.
Excellent.
Oh, good to know.
Hey, Paul, thank you so much for the call. Thanks for checking in, and have a happy 4th. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. Let's go to Kim in an undisclosed location in New York looking at making some somewhat unconventional potato salad. Kim, welcome to Vox Pop.
Thank you. Hi.
Where are you hiding, Kim?
I'm in Albany, New York.
Oh, that's not very far. Okay.
I'm on my lunch break from work.
Okay.
So I was listening in when you first started, and you were talking about potato salads and had a lot of great suggestions. But I just wanted to offer the last time that I made a potato salad, I got this idea of making it with sweet potatoes.
Mm, yum.
And it was fantastic.
And how did you cook the sweet potatoes?
I boiled the sweet potatoes, until they were soft enough, and then I peeled them. And I sort of just made it like I made potato salad with when I use white potatoes. I diced them up. I added mayonnaise, relish, hard-boiled egg, and of course, some spices, and, you know, mix that up.
Yeah, that sounds great. You could also do that by grilling the sweet potatoes if you cut them into thick slices, about an inch thick, and rub them just with a little bit of oil and leave the skin on and grill them on one side then the other and let them cook. Then again, move them off the direct heat, let them cook till they're just al dente, and then dice those up. They're delicious. Even with the skin on the outside in the salad is really good. I like a little Southwestern flair on that. I think they're good with roasted peppers and a little cilantro, a little lime juice and olive oil, touch of mayonnaise. Really, really good.
What about some nuts in there?
Yeah,
some
pecans or walnuts would be great. But the grilling of the sweet potatoes really... what happens is when the black lines from the grill occur, you're creating caramelization. You're bringing the sugars out. So you get these little sweet hits, and that's why I like to add some acidity, some lime juice or some vinegar to pop that sweet.
Hey, Kim, are you cooking tomorrow, Kim?
Actually, I'm going over with friends, and they'll be cooking, so no.
Bring some sweet potato salad for them, huh?
Yes.
Kim,
your idea sounds great.
Well, thanks so much for the call, Kim, and have a happy 4th. And 1-800-348-2551 is the number. We've got one line open now. Let's go to Leroy in Milan, New York, looking for some barbecue advice. Welcome to Vox Pop.
Yes, thank you very much. It's Milan, New York, indeed.
Milan. Yes. Oh, Milan. Now, I know Milan very well. I've got friends in Milan.
Not Milan like in northern Italy.
No, I've got a very good friend who lives in Milan.
I see. And who might that friend be?
The Bards. You know Bob Bard and Jessica Bard?
No, I know the Bard of Avon.
The Bard of Avon.
The other Bard.
Sounds like a knight.
But at any rate, let me get to my dilemma.
Okay.
I own a 1974 Dodge Dart.
Oh, excellent. I had one of those. Not 74, but yeah. Fastback or not?
I'm sorry?
Is it a fastback?
No, no, okay. It's not. It's a standard coupe.
Okay.
Now, it has a cast iron engine, which runs very, very hot.
Mm-hmm.
And on my trips from up here in Milan down to the Newark airport, I cook a chicken. In 2 hours and 40 minutes, the white meat is delectable. The dark meat is very juicy.
Okay.
Is there a manual for engine cooking on either a Dodge, DeSoto, a Plymouth, or any of the Oldsmobile, any of the older cars?
Mm.
I'll hang up and take my answer all off the air.
Sure. Thanks, Leroy. Now, is that a preferred way of cooking chicken?
Well, it's something that, you know, is there's been some lore about that, cooking on the car. I have to tell you, Russ,
it's Leroy.
Oh, I'm sorry, you're Leroy. I am a bit stumped on that one because I've never done it. But there is this fabulous new tool called Google that may be able to help you. I have heard of people doing that before, wrapping their food in foil and putting it under the hood and going for a road trip and having cooked food. I've always been afraid of fan belt disasters and bugs flying into it. But, you know, it's an interesting thing that I'm going to research on my own. And you can go to my website, rickorlando.com, and email me, and I'll dig some stuff up. But, boy, you caught me on that one.
Excellent. Well, hey, Leroy, thanks for the call.
But I will say, when I was a kid, a lot of my uncles, who were first-generation Italians, worked at the Bilco door factory, or those big cellar doors, you know, and they had a huge blast furnace. And I worked there for about a month just to see if I would like that kind of work. Well, of course, it wasn't my cup of tea, but it was a cool chapter in my intellectual development. Aha. But a lot of the old Italian workers would have these tins, and they would put their food, these stews and stuff, in the tins, and they would cook them right in the kiln. They put them in about 11 in the morning, and then for lunch they'd have these hot, bubbling, braised dishes that they cooked in the kilns, which
very
is kind of
nice.
Neat.
Leroy, if you find anything out online, you can also pop over to wamc.org/voxpop and let us know what you found there. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. Now we go to Russ in Malta, New York, looking to get some answers about steak. Russ, welcome to Vox Pop.
Well, thank you very much. First is a comment. If you're worried about carbon monoxide from charcoal, can you imagine the exhaust fumes from an old Dodge that, you know, whose pre-catalytic converter besides? I mean, I can't imagine what must happen to that chicken while it's riding between here and Newark, New Jersey.
Well, Russ, hopefully he's driving very quickly and the wind is blowing to the back. Don't stop at any lights. That was a slant six, right? Yeah, probably held it well.
I think it is, yeah. Just a quick question. I'm horrible at cooking steak, and any individual little primer you can give me would be of great help. Either it be the cut, the temperature, not to flip it. I've heard it all, and I end up with every time I cook a steak, it ends up tough. I don't know if I fool around with it too much, but any pointers you can give me, I would greatly appreciate.
Well, what kind of steak do you buy usually? Let's start with the cut of meat. What kind of steak do you normally buy?
I've tried everything from T-bone to sirloin. I have no luck whatsoever.
Okay, so your richer, fattier cuts, like a strip steak, a ribeye from the loin, are always going to be more tender, but sometimes a sirloin is going to be more meaty, but a sirloin can dry out. And then, the round, which is sold as London broil, is going to be the driest. That's the leanest piece. So you normally grill that and slice that. How do you like your steak cooked? What temperature?
Medium well. That's how
I there you go. You medium well is usually going to lend itself to a drier cut of meat because you're cooking the juices out of the steak. So my first suggestion is get a blindfold and taste a medium rare steak, and then you'll be converted. Because once you taste it with your eyes closed, you get over the red part. But a couple of secrets to cooking a steak. Make sure it's not too thin,
okay?
A nice thick cut. You want about an inch thick because that gives it time to get the proper sear. The other thing with cooking a steak is you want to salt and pepper the steak. And one of the ways they do it in restaurants is you take kosher salt and some black pepper and actually rub it on the outside a little more than you think. Because one of the things that makes us happy in the world is that we're just like doggies. We like dog treats. Is the combination of salt and sugar. All the other complexities on our palate are nuances, but we basically crave salt and sugar. And when you caramelize or brown something on a grill, you're bringing the sugars to the surface. So if you add salt and then it gets brown, you have that salt and sugar thing. And then we say, yes, please. We wag our tail. Mm. We sit. We roll over. We do all the tricks. So rub your steak with salt and pepper. I prefer, if you're going to really work on this, grab a couple of New York strip steaks. They're not super expensive. Okay. They're very filling, and they're beautiful. Maybe anywhere between 3/4 inch thick. Just have your guy at the at the market cut them. Rub them good, and get your fire nice and hot.
Well, I have a gas grill. Maybe I should be ashamed to say that, but I do have a gas grill.
Well, just so you know, 3 out of 4 households in America own gas grills, so you're not alone. You're in the majority. And that's okay. You can do you can cook over a Bic lighter if you do it right. So you got your gas grill, and you get, if you have 2 heat zones on it, which most gas grills have a hot, 2 burners.
Yes, I do. Yep.
Get one nice and hot.
Yep.
Really hot. Let it crank for about 15 minutes with the lid down, and then put your steak down and don't dance with it. Leave it alone. Put your steak down and leave it. Set your mental timer or your iPhone for like 4 minutes and let it cook for 4 minutes. And then just turn it on a 90-degree angle so you get those nice little crosshatch marks, the old 10 o'clock, 2 o'clock, as they say in the restaurant business, and leave it for another 4 minutes.
Okay.
Then you turn it over and you do the same thing. And at that point, you'll have a medium rare to medium steak. But if you move it too many times or if you press on it, you're pressing the juices out of it. So what's happening when you put the salt on the steak is it's actually bringing liquid to the surface, and it's creating a crust at that point. If you don't season it first, you're not going to get a crust. You're going to get like a leathery crust. This will give you kind of a crunchy crust. And then you could move it over to the side if you want to cook it past medium or medium well. Let it cook. And the other thing I would suggest, and they're only like $6, is you buy a little probe thermometer, those little poke-in thermometers.
Yep, I have one, yep.
Good, because when your steak is at about 145, then put it on a plate and let it rest. And that's another secret, is letting your meat rest for at least 5 minutes before you cut into it, because the proteins are dancing. You get them hot. They start shaking around, right? Remember that thing when you were a kid, they showed when you bounce the ball, the molecules are moving around inside the ball? That's what the proteins are doing. They get very tight. They're like elastics. And you let it relax, and you let it sit for about 5 minutes. Some juice will pool up in the plate. And at that point, dig in. You should be good.
Okay.
Did that help?
See, I tended to cut it open to see how well it was done.
Well, if you stick the probe thermometer in there, 160 is fully well done. 120 is a nice rare. But if you get, it's going to continue to cook about 7 to 8%. So if you get it up to about 145 in the center and you let it rest, you'll have a trace of pink in there, but you'll still have a cooked steak, and you should be able to get there. But step by step, work yourself towards steak tartare. See how you do.
Hey, Rux, thank you so much for the call. Have a good 4th of July. Let's talk for a minute about where to get your steak. There's certainly some local venues that have steak available and all types of meat for your 4th of July.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting thing to discuss. And Patrick, I used to do the show a lot back in the 90s when Susan was here, and even through like 5 or 6 years ago, and I would get a lot of questions, especially from the capital region, where can I get good local and natural meat? And it was, I don't have an answer for that, because it was almost not available except for really select places. But times have changed so much. There's so much availability of local food in the area. You know, one of my good friends is Deanna Fox. She has a blog on the Times Union, and it's called Local Flavor. Eat Local, and Eat Local blog, and she's always posting about this. She sent me a bunch of sources, though I know most of them, but I'm sharing that she shared them with me
because
she's an ace. But right now, first of all, the big farmers markets like Schenectady Green Market, the Troy Farmers Market, Del Mar, Saratoga, Spa City, there are meat vendors there all the time. And they're selling local meat. And local meat is really cool to grill. You can get some alternative cuts like hanger steaks or, just short rib steaks that you can cook slowly and barbecue. And then it's also a lot of stores. You know, down in Kingston, we have one of the best local meat markets in the country, which is Fleischer's Grass-Fed and Organic Meats. And Josh and Jess, who own that, are great friends. They met at New World. So that's one of the many, New World hatchlings that's actually shot off and done something awesome.
A match made at New World.
They are so cool. And you know, in around here, there's Barbara's Farm in Middleburg, the Carrot Barn in Schoharie, even Honest Wait Food Co-op down on Delaware Avenue near the Bistro. There's a Cheese Traveler. My good friend Sarah Fish has the Hungry Fish Cafe and Country Store in Troy. So you can get local meats in a lot of places now, and it's really cool because, again, it was really difficult. And even fish, because I love to grill fish, and more people grill fish, it's always been a challenge to find sustainable, clean fish
sure.
in the supermarket world because they have some, but they also have a lot of swai and things from that I wouldn't eat. I didn't mean to say it like that, but but there's a new store over on Western Avenue in the Star Plaza called Finn Your Fishmonger. And he's got a small inventory, but he does mostly sustainable fish. And if you really want to go on their website or give him a call, you can say, listen, I want a really good sustainable mahi-mahi for the weekend. Give him a few days' notice. They'll bring in the fish you want. So there's a lot of resources around now, you know. Hudson Valley naturally has more because of that farm-to-table New York City market. But the Capital District and Washington County and Saratoga has exploded with places.
And hopefully that will continue as folks, you know, the region seems to be growing, especially with the Tech Valley designation.
Absolutely. The region's growing. The demand is growing. And the younger generation of kids who are coming into their own, who were teenagers 10 years ago, who are now living on their own, their specifications are very different. They're not necessarily going to buy those steak gum style flaked meat patties.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny. I went to a reunion last night down in Connecticut with some friends, and it was the first time I've been to a cookout with no foodies. I brought like this local clam salsa and all, and they, you know, had frozen patties and and I just said, "You guys aren't really foodies, are you?" And they're like, "Nope." I said, "Well, I was like the square peg there at that point." But most of the people I know around here are getting more and more into food. You know, taking a trip to a farmer's market or going to one of these little indie markets like the Carrot Barn or Fleischer's is not just you're getting great local product and you're sustaining a lifestyle that we all love. You're also kind of it becomes a lifestyle for you.
Right.
It's not the big supermarket, throw everything in one basket and shop once a week. You become more like a European or more like an Asian where you buy enough food for a couple of days and you buy some local food.
Take a little bit more time, put a little bit more thought into it.
And there's more and more meat cooperatives. Adirondack Grazers online, which is really fantastic. A good friend of mine that I used to work with in Cambridge years ago started this cooperative of Adirondack Grazers with grass-fed meat. So there's a lot of stuff around, and you have access to everything.
Excellent. 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-TALK-1. We're going to take a break right now, a short break, and we will be back with Chef Rick Orlando. You're listening to Vox Pop.
Support for WAMC comes from Berkshire Botanical Gardens, Stockbridge, Massachusetts, featuring their exhibits Rare Earth, Garden Pots as Sculpture, and Down to Earth, Architects Redesign the Potting Shed. Group tours available, berkshirebotanical.org. Mario's True Value Home Center, Valencia, New York, featuring a new kitchen and bath design center and offering weather shield windows and patio doors. True Value, start right, start here. Mario'sTrueValue.com. Kern Compliance Services, LLC, Greenwich, New York. Legal and consulting services on regulatory issues for life insurance and annuity manufacturers and distributors. KernCompliance.com. The Red Line Inn, Stockbridge, Massachusetts. Offering accommodations for Berkshire travelers for over 200 years, 10 minutes from Tanglewood. RedLineInn.com. And Berkshire Co-op Market, Great Barrington, Massachusetts. A community-owned natural grocery store dedicated to sustainable agriculture, the local economy, and the environment. Berkshire.coop.
1-800-348-2551, 1-800-TALK-1. You're listening to Vox Pop. We are here with Chef Rick Orlando. He's chef owner of New World Home Cooking Company in Saugerties and chef manager of New World Bistro Bar in Albany. And we are talking 4th of July cookouts, barbecues, whatever you want to call them. Nomenclature does not matter, and the summertime harvest. And we are going to go to Tony in North Adams, Massachusetts. Tony, welcome to Vox Pop.
Hey, Tony.
Good afternoon, sir. Thank you for taking my call. Could you give me 30 seconds? I have a question about chicken.
Okay.
Some people say it's best with the skin on when you barbecue. And I have a friend that says, well, he can't eat the skin. Okay?
Okay.
All right.
Okay, could you give me 30 seconds so I can put the phone back or put the radio back on?
Well, you can listen right on your phone there, Tony. No problem. Keep the phone to your ear if you can.
Okay.
Is that all right? You're not driving, are you?
What would be the best way to get the moistest chicken?
Well, I mean, grilling with skin on is going to give you a lot more flavor because it becomes a self-basting experience, and, you know, people love the skin. But if you can't eat the skin, there are some great ways to have skin-off chicken. You know, in Lebanon and in India and in Greece, they have these great marinades that they use, and they all revolve around the idea of like a tandoori chicken. But doing a yogurt marinade, if you take the skin off a chicken, you do some lemon juice and some yogurt and some spices, let it marinate for a few hours, and you grill it, that chicken will be very, very moist, tangy, and really, really delicious. I've had some great skin-off chicken like that. And, you know, if you can't eat the skin, then, you know, you have my sympathies, but you can certainly use one of those yogurt-based marinades. Look up a marinade for tandoori or like an Armenian or Greek chicken where you just take, again, yogurt, lemon, maybe some garlic, some onion, some spices, and let it marinate in that yogurt. What the yogurt does is it helps tenderize the chicken, it penetrates the flesh, and the skin will get kind of a crust when you grill it then.
Your friend's not lactose intolerant, is he, Tony? Are they?
Yeah.
They are?
The thing of it is how long do I actually let it cook?
How long? Well, you have to cook it until it's fully cooked inside, right? So if you're doing chicken on the bone, a breast on the bone will take a good 20 to 30 minutes. A leg and thigh will take 30 to 40 minutes. You start it over high heat, and then you move it over and finish it on low heat and let it cook slowly until it's done. As I told the previous caller, a little probe thermometer is really good to have because you can just stick it in the thigh there. Mm. If it's reading 160, you know it's safe and done. Let it rest a little while. But it takes a good 30 to 40 minutes to cook a chicken on the grill. Chicken breast cooks a lot faster, but I do like it on the bone.
All right, Tony.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you, Tony.
All right. Now, a self-basting experience. I like that. That's going to be the name of my next record, I think. So,
I've lived the life.
tell me about, you mentioned, you know, our Armenian cooking and some different cuisines. I've been seeing more and more about goat becoming more popular in cooking over here. I mean, how easy is it to get some goat to cook up?
Well, you are on Central Avenue in Albany, and if you walk down two or three blocks, there are probably 10 halal meat markets.
They're right down the street here.
A good Middle Eastern market will always have goat. Goat is a little tricky to grill because it's very lean, but it's very delicious. Goat is like a cross between pork and lamb. It's whiter than lamb, but it's got that little bit of a gaminess. But you can definitely get goat at any halal market. It stews great. The ribs are really tasty. They're not super meaty, but they're really flavorful. But you have to slow cook a goat. You know, it's lean as can be. So marinate it, slow cook it. The Jamaicans make curry goat where they use curry and lime juice. It likes spices. It likes all that good stuff. It also likes yogurt marinades, the Greek and Middle Eastern style, where you'd put maybe some cumin, some coriander, some cinnamon, some yogurt, grated onion, lemon juice, let it marinate in there, and then grill it on high heat and then let it go nice and slowly for an hour or so until it gets tender.
All
goat's,
right.
Goat's great stuff.
Going to have to try that out.
And sustainable.
Yeah.
Clean.
Let's go to Aaron in Albany. Aaron, you're on Vox Pop.
Hi.
Hello, Miss Aaron. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Long time.
I know. I miss you. I was calling to, I've been trying to find ways to use our grill after we've done, you know, cooking all our veggies and meats and everything. Mm-hmm. The heat's still there. So we had strawberry shortcake one night, and I grilled the pound cake.
Mm-hmm.
That was awesome.
Yeah.
But I'm looking for other things that you might be able to suggest that we could use the grill for.
Oh, God. There's so many great grilled desserts you can do. I love grilling desserts. Mm. First of all, start with grilling fruit, especially now. Peaches, plums, nectarines, right? Split your nectarine in half, pop out the pit. Rub it with a little olive oil or melted butter, sprinkle a little sugar on it, and grill it on the cut side until it gets nice and dark and charred. And then you can serve that with a myriad of delicious things, anything from Greek yogurt to ice cream to just drizzle it with sauce. You can pour some sugar on it and hit it with a torch and brulee it. Grilling bananas is really cool. You leave them in the skin.
Okay.
And you cut them the long way, split it the long way. Sprinkle a little sugar, maybe a little bit of coriander on the outside, and grill that. You have to make sure you oil your grill before you grill them because the sugars will make them stick. But
okay.
You grill those bananas and scoop them out. I've done strawberry shortcake where I've actually grilled the strawberries on a skewer.
Mm-hmm.
They get a little broken up, but they taste really good. They get a nice little funky flavor. And what I normally do is I'll take maybe a little bit of vodka with some sugar or a different liqueur, throw some orange peels in it or some Grand Marnier, have that in a little pan on the side, nice and warm, and then grill the strawberries and throw them in there and hit it with a bunch of whipped cream and stir it up. And then another thing that's kind of fun, I did it a recent cooking class at Different Drummer's Kitchen.
Oh.
Is a French dessert called pain au chocolat, which means bread and chocolate. So we're doing a beer dinner on Friday night, and we're doing a 6-foot sub, and we're actually doing a big loaf of bread.
I was reading this on your blog.
Yes, that we're filling with chocolate and figs and curried cashews. We're wrapping the whole thing in foil, and we're just rolling it around on the grill till it all melts in there, and then cutting it into wedges and serving that like the like a crazy grilled cheese, but it's going to be a chocolate sandwich. So that's kind of fun. I've grilled brownies. I've tried grilling everything. You know, one of my most inspirational books when I first started cooking in the 80s was a book by a man named Chris Schlesinger, who's a well-known restaurateur and a great writer. And his first big hit was called The Thrill of the Grill, and it was about how to grill anything. And it's a book I recommend to anybody who likes to use a grill outside.
Mm-hmm.
Did I help you, Aaron?
It did. Thank
you. And
you
could
so
also
much.
grill sweet cheese, you know.
Ooh.
Put like some little goat cheese on the grill quickly. You know, it's a little messy, but it's always delicious and always fun.
Mm-hmm. That sounds
thanks so much.
Awesome.
Sure,
I'm very hungry.
See ya.
Now. Thanks, Aaron. All right, let's go back here. 1-800-348-2551 coming into the home stretch of the program, and we'll go to Margaret in Poughkeepsie. Margaret, welcome to Vox Pop.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, Margaret. I'm great. How about you?
Thanks for taking my call. I'm a big fan since I met you at the Taste of the Hudson Valley through St. Francis years ago when you were one of our guest chefs.
Oh, and I'll be there this year again.
Yeah, I've been following your work ever since.
Oh, cool.
And,
thanks.
And your restaurants, too. I'm curious about your TV side. I see all the chefs on TV liberally salting everything with their salt dishes.
Mm-hmm.
And my question is, there's such a lot of discussion about salt. And sometimes they say, I'm salting the eggplant, now I'm salting this, now. My question is, as a home chef,
mm-hmm.
how much of that salting should I take to heart? How much of that salting affects the outcome of my dish, health-wise? And, you know, I'm just kind of curious about it because I have a salt grinder, but I'm wondering if I should switch to the cellar and, you know, start liberally finger salting too, and just kind of want your opinion on that.
Well, I think it all depends on your personal health. Salt in itself is not necessarily bad. There's a lot of inherent salt in processed food, and if people eat processed food a lot, you know, fast food, cheap food, you know, packaged foods, you're going to be getting a lot of salt in your diet that's going to affect your health without worrying about seasoning fresh and clean food. And don't forget, potassium cleanses salt from your body. So if you're getting plenty of potassium, eating some greens, eating some bananas, it really balances your salt. But, you know, a funny thing I learned working on a cookbook, and I'm working on a new one, is all the editors say, never give the exact amount of salt in a recipe, because if people want to eat your food the way they like to eat it, the amount of salt would look really scary in the nutritional guidelines. So if you notice in most cook recipes, it'll say salt and pepper to taste.
Right.
Yeah,
because
that's
that
true.
Way, yeah, I mean, that way you're not going to say put a teaspoon of salt. A teaspoon of salt would seem like 10 times a daily allotment, but you don't really eat the teaspoon of salt. It falls off, it comes off, but you season it. I think the most important thing is season the food the way you like to taste it and take care of yourself, you know, and make sure you get potassium and drink some fresh juices, orange juices and you know, pomegranate juices and eat some bananas and balance yourself. And yeah, it's all in balance, you know, but a steak with some salt on it is really, really good.
Mm.
A steak without it's pretty yucky, you know, so.
Yeah, that's true.
You got to do what you have to do to be happy.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, and I'm going to see you in September at the WAMC event.
Thanks. Hey, did that help?
See you then. Thanks so
thanks.
Much.
See you.
Thanks,
bye.
Margaret. 1-800-348-2551. Let's go to Jane in Altamont. Jane, welcome to Vox Pop.
Hello.
Hi, Jane. How are you?
I'm nervous. I haven't been on the radio in ever.
Well, just pretend we're sitting by the barbecue, me and you and a couple of lawn chairs and a margarita. Let's go.
Okay. I moved up here from Long Island,
mm-hmm.
where we had a plethora of fish and good food, and I'm finding it up here as well.
Mm-hmm.
However, I moved to a condominium, and we're not allowed to have a gas grill or a
A charcoal
grill.
Yeah, ooh, that's tricky.
And a lot of the people use an electric grill. I'm calling to see your advice because I cooked a lot on the grill at home. Mm. I had a Weber, a beautiful Weber, and I've had all of them, the kettle and a charcoal kettle and a gas grill. Do you have any advice?
You know, I'm a little limited on an electric grill because I've never really cooked on one outside.
Yeah.
I could suggest finding a really good park where you can go and have your barbecues outside.
Oh, well, we have a grill near the pool here,
yeah.
But then I have to carry everything
Well, a good cooler with wheels. But, you know, I can't really help you on the electric grill thing because I've actually never cooked on one. I was reading about them as I was doing some research for the show, and I saw that they're starting to make inroads because I guess there are a lot of communities like where you live where they're not allowing
allow
the open
it.
Flames.
Mm. Correct.
I'm gonna have to do some work on that. Just go to rickorlando.com and email me. I'm gonna give you some insight because I'm gonna email a few people I know that may have more information than me on that. But I've never cooked on an
electric
grill.
That'd be great. I know Weber makes an electric one, but I was wondering if it would be worth trying it.
Well, I think it would be worth trying it if you really like to sit out on your deck and you like to throw a little fish on the grill. Or something like that. I can't see why it would be bad if it got hot. I mean, I use an electric toaster oven.
It would be a different,
flavor.
Different taste. Mm-hmm.
Let me give you an ingredient that's going to help you. You can get this probably in. I know in Price Chopper in the ethnic aisles. There's a Spanish paprika called pimenton. Pimenton. P-I-M-E-N-T-O-N. And it's smoked
like
paprika.
Yeah.
And that if you add a little bit of that smoked paprika to your rub, it's going to give you a smoky flavor as if you were cooking over charcoal without using the charcoal.
We're fooling the grill.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
That sounds
excellent.
Great.
All right.
Well, hey, Jane, thanks for the call. Have a happy 4th. We are coming into the home stretch here, and we'll go to Peter in Saratoga. Peter, welcome to Vox Pop.
Hey, thanks so much.
Hi, Peter.
I am also a big fan of both New World Home Cooking and the Bistro.
Thanks.
And I've also attended different drummers' your cooking show there.
Oh, good. Well, I'm trying to visualize you based on your voice, but we'll figure that out.
Hey, I'm one of those crazy guys that about a month and a half ago, I'm pulled over in the North Bay, and this guy wants to talk to me now. One second. I'm one of those crazy fishermen that was out there about a month and a half ago, and I caught one of those big stripers.
Yeah.
And so I've got like 15-pound fillet packed in the back of the car. I'm heading up to the lake, and with 15 pounds, I'm not exactly sure how to treat it, but I want to grill it, and I'm just hoping you had some recommendations for that. It's whole. I took the head off. In fact, I wanted to call you right after I had the roe there, and I didn't know how to treat that, and I wound up throwing it in the garbage.
Sad.
Yeah.
I think in order to handle the striper on the grill, because when the fish cooks, it does crumble, you're probably better off cutting it into chunks, into portions, about 4 to 6 ounce pieces, leaving the skin.
Bobs.
Yeah, and leaving the skin on.
Yeah.
Because the skin is really good, and season that skin up well. And, you know, you can do one of two things. You can grill it strictly on the grill where you would have a little basting, a little olive oil, maybe some lemon juice. Maybe it even takes to balsamic vinegar or a sweet vinegar, some fresh herbs. I like to take thyme and tarragon and leave it and just brush. Use that as my grill brush to get the flavor in it. But you grill it on the skin side for a while and make sure the grill is hot. And then roll it around. Make sure you oil your grill. That's very important because fish sticks, right? So oil your grill.
Yep.
You can either use cooking spray or you can rub it with an oily towel, not extra virgin olive oil, and get it seared up and move it to the other side of the grill and let it finish slowly. Or one of the other things you can do is sear it and then put it in a little bit of foil with all your herbs and lemon juice and just kind of bundle it up and let it finish on the grill and steam right in the foil so it cooks through. But striper is one of my favorite proteins to eat. I love good striped bass, and grilling it is really fabulous. But it's hard to grill it whole because it'll break up when you try to move it because it's too hard. So, yeah, cut portions of it. Skin side, season that skin really well so it gets crispy, and then finish it gently, basting as you go.
Okay.
Easy enough?
Easy enough.
It loves olives. It loves all that good stuff.
Oh, excellent. Hey, Peter.
Happy 4th.
Happy 4th, Peter. Thank you so much for the call. Chef, what should people do if they want to get in touch with you? You've got a website, and I know that the restaurants also have websites. What's the best way to get in touch with you?
The best way to get in touch with me and find out about what I'm talking about and ask me questions and bug me or whatever you want is just go to rickorlando.com. There's no K in that. It's RICorlando.com. Mm-hmm. Right on that page, there are buttons for New World Home Cooking, New World Bistro Bar, buttons for New World Catering, buttons for recipes, and also button for my blog. And on the blog, there is a plethora of recipes and links. I upload to that pretty regularly. You can also, from the rickorlando.com, you can go to my Facebook page. Torture
Excellent.
Me. And we'll, always here.
And we will link to rickorlando.com from Good. Our page, too. It's wamc.org.
Yeah, we created a portal site so I don't have to give a million addresses. It's one site where all the buttons are there.
The convenience of the web.
Helps.
Yeah. Well, we are just about out of time, but I want to thank everyone who called in and apologize to Vaughn and Fred. Call in a little bit earlier next time, guys, and we'll get your questions in. I'd also like to thank our guest chef, Rick Orlando, again for stopping by today. Thank you very much, sir.
Thanks.
Support for Vox Pop comes from Wiawaka, Lake George, New York, an enrichment and revitalization historic lakefront retreat created by and for women since 1903, wiawaka.org for events. NBT Bank, offering trust and fiduciary services, investment management, and retirement planning for individuals and businesses, nbtbank.com. Ward's Nursery and Garden Center, Great Barrington, for colorful astilbe, daylily, delphinium, phlox, bee balm, alpine, and deer-resistant perennials, Ward's Nursery.com. And Performance Automotive, Pittsfield, a European and Saab service center serving Western Massachusetts and the greater Albany market for 25 years. Saab, it's not just a car, it's a passion. SaabPerformance.com. Thanks again for joining us today on Vox Pop. Our engineer has been Zach Malloy. Thanks to Hannah Honstein Flack for answering the phones today. I'm Patrick Donges. Hey, have a happy 4th of July, everybody. We'll have Moyers and Company on Friday and return next week with Medical Monday. Stay tuned now for a news update.